saving the plateau run? I'm sure you were quite brave.
Quite.
Though probably not as brave as the poor men who have to clean your armor. Adolin bellowed out a laugh. For the first time it seemed like something genuine, an emotion from him that wasn't scripted or expected. He pounded his fist on the table, then waved for more wine, wiping a tear from his eye. The grin he gave her threatened to bring out another blush. Wait, Shallan thought. Did that just work? She was supposed to be acting feminine and delicate, not asking men what it's like to have to defecate in battle.
All right, Adolin said, taking the cup of wine.
He didn't even glance at the serving woman this time.
What other dirty secrets do you want to know? You've got me laid bare. There are tons of things the stories and official histories don't mention.
The chrysalises, Shallan said, eager. What do they look like?
That's what you want to know? Adolin said, scratching his head. I thought for sure you'd want to know about the chafing.
Shallan got out her satchel, setting a piece of paper on the table and starting a sketch. From what I've been able to determine, nobody has done a solid study on the chasm fiends. There are some sketches of dead ones, but that's it, and the anatomy on those is dreadful. They must have an interesting life cycle. They haunt these chasms, but I doubt they actually live here. There's not enough food to support creatures of their size. That means they come here as part of some migratory pattern. They come here to pupate. Have you ever seen a juvenile before they form the chrysalis?
No, Adolin said, scooting his chair around the table. It often happens at night, and we don't spot them until morning. They're hard to see out there, colored like rock. Makes me think the Parshendi must be watching us. We end up fighting over plateaus so often. It might mean they spot us mobilizing, then use the direction we're going to judge where to find the chrysalis. We get a head start, but they move faster over the plains, so we arrive near the same time.
He trailed off, cocking his head to get a better look at her sketch.
Storms? That's really good, Shallan.
Thanks.
No, I mean really good.
She'd done a quick sketch of several types of chrysalises she had read about in her books, along with quick depictions of a man beside them for size reference. It wasn't very good. She'd done it for speed. Yet Adolin seemed genuinely impressed. The shape and texture of the chrysalis, Shallan said, could help place the chasm fiends in a family of similar animals.
It looks most like this one, Adolin said, scooting closer and pointing at one of the sketches. When I've touched one, they've been hard as rock. It's hard to dig into one without a shard blade. It can take men with hammers forever to break into one.
Hmm, Shallan said, making a note. You're sure?
Yeah, that's how they look. Why?
That's the chrysalis of a Unerig, Shallan said. A great shell from the seas around Marabethia. The people there feed criminals to them, I'm told.
Ouch.
This might be a false positive, a coincidence. The Unerig are an aquatic species. The only time they come onto land is to pupate. Seems tenuous to assume a relationship to the chasm fiends.
Sure, Adolin said, taking a drink of wine. If you say so.
This is probably important, Shallan said.
For research, yeah, I know. Aunt Navani is always talking about things like that.
This could be of more practical import than that, Shallan said. About how many of these things total are killed by your armies and the Parshendi each month?
Adolin shrugged. One every 3 days or so, I'd guess. Sometimes more, sometimes less. So 15 or so a month?
You see the problem?
Adolin shook his head. No, sorry. I'm kind of useless at anything that doesn't involve someone getting stabbed.
She smiled at him. Nonsense. You proved skilled at choosing wine.
I did that basically at random.
And it tastes delicious, Shallan said. Empirical proof of your methodology.
Now, you probably don't see the problem because you don't have the proper facts. Great shells generally are slow to breed and slow to grow. This is because most ecosystems can only support a small population of apex predators of this size.
I've heard some of those words before.
She looked to him, raising an eyebrow. He'd gotten a lot closer to her, in order to look at her drawing. He wore a faint cologne, a brisk woody scent. Oh my.
All right, he said,
chuckling as he inspected her drawings.
I'm not as dense as I feign. I see what you're saying. You really think we could kill enough of them that it could be a problem? I mean, people have been doing great shell hunts for generations, and the beasts are still around.
You're not hunting them here, Adolin. You're harvesting them. You're systematically destroying their juvenile population. Have fewer of them been pupating lately?
Yeah, he said, though he sounded reluctant. We think it might be the season.
It might be. Or it might be that after over 5 years of harvesting, the population is starting to dwindle. Animals like the chasm fiends don't normally have predators. Suddenly losing 150 or more of their numbers a year could be catastrophic to their population.
Adolin frowned. The gem hearts we get feed the people of the war camps. Without a constant flow of new stones of reasonable size, the soul casters will eventually crack the ones we have, and we won't be able to support the armies here.
I'm not telling you to stop your hunts, Shallan said, blushing. This probably wasn't the point she should be making. You're a Thiru and the Parshman. That was the immediate problem. Still, she needed to gain Adolin's trust. If she could provide useful help regarding the chasm fiends, perhaps he'd listen when she approached him with something even more revolutionary. All I'm saying, Shallan continued, is that it's worth thinking about and studying. What would it be like if you could start raising chasm fiends, growing them to juveniles in batches like men raise chulls? Instead of hunting three a week, what if you could breed and harvest hundreds?
That would be useful, Adolin said thoughtfully. What would you need in order to make it happen?
Well, I wasn't saying... I mean... She stopped herself. I need to get out onto the shattered plains, she said more firmly. If I'm going to try to figure out how to breed them, I'd need to see one of these chrysalises before it's been cut into. Preferably, I'd get to see an adult chasm fiend, and ideally, I'd like a captured juvenile to study.
Just a small list of impossibilities.
Well, you did ask.
I might be able to get you out onto the plains, Adolin said. Father promised that he'd show Jasnah a dead chasm fiend, so I think he was planning to take her out after a hunt. Seeing a chrysalis, though, those rarely appear close to camp. I'd have to take you dangerously close to Parshendi territory.
I'm sure you can protect me. He looked at her, expectant. What? Shallan asked.
I'm waiting for a wisecrack.
I was serious, Shallan said. With you there, I'm certain the Parshendi wouldn't dare get close.
Adolin smiled.
I mean, she said, the stench alone.
I suspect I'm never going to live down telling you about that.
Never, Shallan agreed. You are honest, detailed, and engaging. Those aren't the sorts of things I let myself forget about a man. His smile broadened. Storms, those eyes. Careful, Shallan told herself. Careful. Capsule took you in easily. Don't repeat that.
I'll see what I can do, Adolin said. The Parshendi might not be an issue in the near future.
Really? He nodded.
It's not widely known, though we've told the High Princes. Father is going to be meeting with some of the Parshendi leaders tomorrow. It could end up starting a peace negotiation.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Adolin said. I'm not hopeful. The assassin... Anyway, we'll see what happens tomorrow, though I'll have to do this between the other work Father has for me.
The duels, Shallan said, leaning in. What is going on there, Adolin?
He seemed hesitant.
Whatever is going on in the camps now, she said, speaking more softly. Jasna didn't know about it. I feel woefully ignorant about politics here, Adolin. Your father and High Prince Sadius had a falling out, I've gathered. The king has changed the nature of these plateau runs, and everyone is talking about how you're dueling now. But from what I've been able to gather, you never stopped dueling.
It's different, he said. Now I'm dueling to win.
And you didn't before?
No. Then I dueled to punish.
He glanced about, then met her eyes.
It began when my father started seeing visions.
He continued. He poured out a surprising story, one with far greater detail than she'd anticipated. A story of betrayal and of hope. Visions of the past. A unified Alethkar, prepared to weather a coming storm. She didn't know what to make of it all, though she gathered that Adolin was telling her of it because he knew the rumors in camp. She'd heard of Dalinar's fits, of course, and had an inkling of what Sadius had done. When Adolin mentioned that his father wanted the Knights Radiant to return, Shallan felt a chill. She glanced about for Pattern, he'd be close, but couldn't find him. The meat of the story, at least in Adolin's estimation, was the betrayal by Sadius. The young prince's eyes grew dark, face flushed, as he talked of being abandoned on the plains, surrounded by enemies. He seemed embarrassed when he spoke of salvation by a lowly bridge crew. He's actually confiding in me, Shallan thought, feeling a thrill. She rested her free hand on his arm as he spoke, an innocent gesture, but it seemed to spur him forward, as he quietly explained Dalinar's plan. She wasn't certain he should be sharing all of this with her. They barely knew one another. But speaking of it seemed to lift a weight from Adolin's back, and he grew more relaxed.
I guess, Adolin said, that's the end of it. I'm supposed to win shard blades off the others, taking away their bite, embarrassing them. But I don't know if it will work.
Why not? Shallan asked.
The ones who agree to duel me aren't important enough, he said, forming a fist. If I win too much from them, the real targets, the high princes, will get scared of me and refuse duels. I need matches that are more high profile. No, what I need is to duel Sadius. Pound that grinning face of his into the stones and take back my father's blade. He's too oily, though. We'll never get him to agree.
She found herself wishing desperately to do something, anything, to help. She felt herself melting at the intense concern in those eyes, the passion. Remember Capsule, she reminded herself again. Well, Adolin wasn't likely to try to assassinate her. But then that didn't mean she should let her brain turn to curry paste around him. She cleared her throat, tearing her eyes away from his and looking down at her sketch. Father, she said. I've left you upset. I'm not very good at this wooing thing.
Could have fooled me, Adolin said, resting his hand on her arm.
Shallan covered another blush by ducking her head and digging into her satchel. You, she said, need to know what your cousin was working on before she died.
Another volume in her father's biography?
No, Shallan said, getting out a sheet of paper. Adolin, Jasna thought that the Voidbringers were going to return.
What? He said, frowning. She didn't even believe in the Almighty. Why would she believe in the Voidbringers?
She had evidence, Shallan said, tapping the paper with one finger. A lot of that sank in the ocean, I'm afraid, but I do have some of her notes. And, Adolin, how hard do you think it would be to convince the High Princes to get rid of their parchment?
Get rid of what?
How hard would it be to make everyone stop using parchment as slaves? Give them away, or...
Storms.
She didn't want to start a genocide here, did she?
But these were the Voidbringers.
Or set them free or something. Get them out of the war camps.
How difficult would it be? Adolin said. Off the cuff, I'd say impossible. That or really impossible. Why would we even want to do something like that?
Yasna thought they might be related to the Voidbringers and their return.
Adolin shook his head, looking bemused. Shallan, we can barely get the High Princes to fight this war properly. If my father or the king were to require everyone to get rid of their parchment, storms, it would break the kingdom in a heartbeat.
So Yasna was right on that count as well. Unsurprising. Shallan was interested to see how violently Adolin himself opposed the idea. He took a big gulp of wine, seeming utterly floored. Time to pull back, then. This meeting had gone very well. She wouldn't want it to end on a sour note.
It was something Yasna said, Shallan said. But really, I'd rather that Bright Lady Navani judge how important a suggestion it was. She would know her daughter, her notes, better than anyone.
Adolin nodded. So go to her.
Shallan tapped the paper in her fingers. I've tried. She's not been very accommodating.
Aunt Navani can be overbearing sometimes.
It's not that, Shallan said, scanning the words on the letter. It was a reply she'd gotten after requesting to meet the woman and discuss her daughter's work. She doesn't want to meet with me. She barely seems to want to acknowledge I exist.
Adolin sighed. She doesn't want to believe. About Yasna, I mean. You represent something to her, the truth in a way. Give her time. She just needs to grieve.
I'm not certain if this is something that should wait, Adolin.
I'll talk to her, he said. How about that?
Wonderful, she said. Much like you yourself.
He grinned. It's nothing. I mean, if we're going to be halfway almost kind of maybe getting married, we should probably look out for one another's interests.
He paused.
Don't mention that parchment thing to anyone else, though. That's not something that will go over well.
She nodded absently, then realized she'd been staring at him. She was going to kiss those lips of his someday. She let herself imagine it. And Ash's eyes. He had a very friendly way about him. She hadn't expected that in someone so high-born. She'd never actually met anyone of his rank before coming to the Shattered Plains, but all the men she knew near his level had been stiff and even angry. Not Adolin. Storms. But being with him was something else she could get very, very used to. People began to stir on the patio. She ignored them for a moment, but then many began to stand up from their seats, looking eastward. High storm.
Right.
Shallan felt a spike of alarm as she looked toward the origin of storms. The wind picked up, leaves and bits of refuse fluttering across the patio. Down below, the outer market had been packed up, tents folded away, awnings withdrawn, windows closed. The entirety of the war camps braced itself. Shallan stuffed her things into her satchel, then rose to her feet, stepping to the edge of the terrace, freehand fingers on the stone railing there. Adolin joined her. Behind them, people whispered and gathered. She heard iron grinding across stone. The parchmen had begun pulling away the tables and chairs, stowing them to both protect them and make a path for the Light Eyes to retreat to safety. The horizon had bled from light to dark, like a man flushing with anger. Shallan gripped the railing, watching the entire world transform. Vines withdrew, rock buds closed, grass hid in its holes. They knew, somehow. They all knew. The air grew chill and wet, and pre-storm winds gusted against her, blowing her hair back. Below and just to the north, the war camps had piled refuse and waste to be blown away with the storm. It was a forbidden practice in most civilized areas, where that waste could blow into the next town. Out here there was no next town. The horizon grew even darker. A few people on the balcony fled to the back room's safety, their nerves getting the better of them. Most stayed, silent.
Windspren zipped in tiny rivers of light overhead. Shallan took Adolin by the arm, staring eastward. Minutes passed until finally she saw it. The storm wall. A huge sheet of water and debris blown before the storm. In places it flashed with light from behind, revealing movement and shadows within. Like the skeleton of a hand when light illuminated the flesh, there was something inside this wall of destruction. Most of the people fled the balcony, though the storm wall was still distant. In moments, only a handful remained, Shallan and Adolin among them. She watched, transfixed, as the storm approached. It took longer than she'd expected. It was moving at a terrible speed, but it was so large they'd been able to spot it from quite a distance. It consumed the shattered plains, one plateau at a time. Soon it loomed over the war camps, coming on with a roar. "We should go," Adolin eventually said. She barely heard him. Life. Something lived inside that storm, something that no artist had ever drawn, no scholar had ever described. "Shallan." Adolin began to tow her toward the protected room. She grabbed the railing with her free hand, remaining in place, clutching her satchel to her chest with her safe hand. That humming, that was pattern. She'd never been so close to a high storm. Even when she'd been only inches away from one, separated by a window shutter, she had not been as close as she was now. Watching that darkness descend upon the war camps. "I need to draw." "Shallan," Adolin said, pulling her away from the railing. "They'll close the doors if we don't go now." With a start, she realized that everyone else had left the balcony. She allowed Adolin to get her moving, and she joined him in a dash across the empty patio. They reached the room at the side, packed with huddled light eyes who watched in terror. Adolin's guards entered right after her, and several parchments slammed the thick doors. The bar thumped in place, locking out the sky, leaving them to the light of spheres on the walls. Shallan counted. The high storm hit. She could feel it. Something beyond the thumping of the door and the distant sound of thunder. 6 seconds, she said.
What?
Adolin asked. His voice was hushed, and others in the room spoke in whispers. It took 6 seconds after the servants closed the doors until the storm hit. We could have spent that much longer out there. Adolin regarded her with an incredulous expression.
When you first realized what we were doing on that balcony, you seemed terrified.
I was.
Now you wish you'd stayed out until the last moment before the storm hit?
Yeah, she said, blushing.
I have no idea what to make of you.
Adolin regarded her.
You're not like anyone I've met.
It's my air of feminine mystique.
He raised an eyebrow.
It's a term we use, she said, when we're feeling particularly erratic. It's considered polite not to point out that you know this. Now, do we just wait in here?
In this box of a room?
Adolin asked, sounding amused.
We're light eyes, not livestock.
He gestured to the side, where several servants had opened doors leading to places burrowed deeper into the mountain.
Two sitting rooms, one for men, the other for women.
Shallan nodded. Sometimes during a high storm, the genders would retire to separate rooms to chat. It looked like the wine house followed this tradition. They'd probably have finger food. Shallan walked toward the indicated room, but Adolin rested a hand on her arm, making her pause.
I'll see about getting you out onto the shattered plains, he said. Amaram wants to go explore more, he said, than he gets to during a plateau run. I think he and Father are having dinner to talk about it tomorrow night, and I can ask then if I can bring you. I'll also talk to Aunt Navani. Maybe we can discuss what I've come up with at the feast next week.
There's a feast next week?
There's always a feast next week, Adolin said. We just have to figure out who's throwing it. I'll send to you.
She smiled, and then they separated. Next week is not soon enough, she thought. I'll have to find a way to drop in on him when it's not too awkward. Had she really promised to help him breed chasm fiends? As if she needed something else to take her time. Still, she felt good about the day as she entered the women's sitting room, her guards taking their places in the appropriate waiting room. Shallan strolled through the women's room, which was well lit with gemstones gathered in goblets, cut stones but not in spheres. An expensive display. She felt that if her teachers had been watching, both would have been disappointed at her conversation with Adolin. Tin would have wanted her to manipulate the prince more. Yasna would have wanted Shallan to be more poised, more in control of her tongue. It seemed that Adolin liked her anyway. That made her want to cheer. The looks of the women about her washed away that emotion. Some turned backs toward Shallan, and others pressed their lips together and looked her up and down skeptically. Courting the kingdom's most eligible bachelor was not going to make her popular. Not when she was an outsider. That didn't bother Shallan. She didn't need acceptance from these women. She just needed to find Urithiru and the secrets it contained. Gaining Adolin's trust was a big step in that direction. She decided to reward herself by stuffing her face with sweets and thinking further on her plan to sneak into Bright Lord Amaram's house.
50. Uncut Gems. And now, if there was an uncut gem among the Radiance, it was the Will Shapers. For though enterprising, they were erratic, and Invia wrote of them, capricious, frustrating, unreliable, as taking it for granted that others would agree. This may have been an intolerant view, as often Invia expressed, for this order was said to be most varied, inconsistent in temperament, save for a general love of adventure, novelty, or oddity. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 7, Page 1. Adolin sat in a high-backed chair, cup of wine in his hand, listening to the high storm rumble outside. He should have felt safe in this bunker of rock, but there was something about storms that undercut any sense of security, no matter how rational. He'd be glad for the weeping and the end of the high storms for a few weeks. Adolin raised his cup toward Elit, who stomped past. He hadn't seen the man above, on the winehouse terrace, but this chamber also served as a high-storm bunker for several shops in the outer market. "Are you ready for our duel?" Adolin asked. "You've made me wait an entire week so far, Elit." The short, balding man took a drink of wine, then lowered his cup, not looking at Adolin. "My cousin is planning to kill you for challenging me," he said, "right after he kills me for agreeing to the challenge." He finally turned toward Adolin. "But when I stomp you into the sands and claim all of your family's shards, I'll be the rich one, and he'll be forgotten. Am I ready for our duel? I long for it, Adolin Colin." "You're the one who wanted to wait," Adolin noted. "The more time to savor what I'm going to do to you." Elit smiled with white lips, then moved on. "Creepy fellow." Well, Adolin would deal with him in 2 days, the date of their duel. Before that, though, was tomorrow's meeting with the Parshendi Shardbearer. It loomed over him like a thunderhead. What would it mean if they finally found peace? He mulled over that thought regarding his wine and listening with half an ear to Elit chatting behind him with someone. Adolin recognized that voice, didn't he? Adolin sat upright, then looked over his shoulder. How long had Sadius been back there, and why hadn't Adolin spotted him when first entering? Sadius turned to him, a calm smile on his face. "Maybe he'll just..." Sadius strolled up to Adolin, hands clasped behind his back, wearing a fashionable open-fronted short brown coat and an embroidered green stock. The buttons along the front of the coat were gemstones, emeralds, to match the stock. Storms. He did not want to deal with Sadius today. The High Prince took the seat beside Adolin, their backs to a hearth that a parchment had begun stoking. The room contained a low hum of nervous conversation. You could never quite be comfortable, no matter how pretty the decor, when a high storm raged outside. "Young Adolin," Sadius said, "what do you think of my coat?" Adolin took a gulp of wine, not trusting himself to reply. "I should just get up and walk away." But he didn't. A small part of him wished for Sadius to provoke him, push away his inhibitions, drive him to do something stupid. Killing the man right here, right now, would likely earn Adolin an execution, or at least an exile. It might be worth either punishment. "You've always been so keen-eyed when it comes to style," Sadius continued. "I'd know your opinion. I do think the coat is splendid, but I worry that the short cut might be trending out of fashion. What is the latest from Leofor?" Sadius pulled out the front of his jacket, moving his hand to display a ring that matched the buttons. The ring's emerald, like those on the jacket, was uncut. They glowed softly with stormlight. "Uncut emeralds," Adolin thought, then looked up to meet Sadius's eyes. The man smiled. "The gemstones are recent acquisitions," Sadius noted. "I am fond of them." Gained from doing a plateau run with Ruthar that he wasn't supposed to have been on. Racing ahead of the other high princes like this was the old days, where each prince tried to be first and claim their winnings. "I hate you," Adolin whispered. "As well you should," Sadius said, letting go of his coat. He nodded toward Adolin's bridgeman guards, watching with overt hostility nearby. "My former property is treating you well. I've seen their like patrolling the market here. I find that amusing for reasons I doubt I could ever properly express." "They patrol," Adolin said, "to create a better Alethkar." "Is that what Dalinar wants? I am surprised to hear it. He talks of justice, of course, but he doesn't allow justice to take its course. Not properly."
"And I know where you're going, Sadius," Adolin snapped. "You're annoyed that we haven't been letting you put judges into our war camp as High Prince of Information. Well, I'll have you know that Father has decided to let—"
"High Prince of Information? You didn't hear? I recently renounced the title."
"What?"
"Yes," Sadius said. "I fear I was never a good match for the position. My Shalashian temperament, perhaps. I wish Dalinar good fortune in finding a replacement, though from what I've heard, the other High Princes have come to an agreement that none of us are suited to these kinds of appointments."
"He renounces the king's authority," Adolin thought. Storms, this was bad. He gritted his teeth and found himself reaching his hand to the side to summon his blade. No. He pulled the hand back. He'd find a way to force this man into the dueling ring. Killing Sadius now, no matter how much he deserved it, would undermine the very laws and codes Adolin's father was working so hard to uphold. But storms! Adolin was tempted. Sadius smiled again.
"Do you think me an evil man, Adolin?"
"That's too simple a term," Adolin snapped. "You're not just evil. You're a selfish, creme-crusted eel who is trying to strangle this kingdom with his bulbous bastard hand."
"Eloquent," Sadius said. "You realize I created this kingdom.
You only helped my father and uncle."
"Men who are both gone," Sadius said. "The Blackthorn is as dead as old Gavilar. Instead, two idiots rule this kingdom, and each one is, in a way, a shadow of a man I loved."
He leaned forward, looking Adolin straight in the eyes.
"I'm not strangling Alethkar, son. I'm trying with everything I have to keep a few chunks of it strong enough to weather the collapse your father is bringing."
Don't call me son, Adolin hissed. Fine, Sadius said, standing. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm glad you survived the events on the tower that day. You'll make a fine high prince in the coming months. I have a feeling that in 10 years or so, following an extended civil war between the two of us, our alliance will be a strong one. By then you'll understand why I did what I did. I doubt it. I'll have rammed my sword through your gut long before that, Sadius. Sadius raised his cup of wine, then walked off, joining a different group of light eyes. Adolin let out a long sigh of exhaustion, then leaned back against the chair. Nearby, his short bridgeman guard, the one with the silver at his temples, gave Adolin a nod of respect. Adolin slumped there, feeling drained, until long after the high storm ended and people started to depart. Adolin preferred to wait until the rain stopped completely before leaving anyway. He never liked how his uniform looked when it got wet. Eventually he rose, collected his two guards, and stepped out of the winehouse to a gray sky and a deserted outer market. He was mostly over the conversation with Sadius, and kept reminding himself that up to that point the day had been going very well. Shallan and her carriage had already gone, of course. He could have ordered a ride for himself, but after being locked away for so long, it felt good to be walking in the open air, chill, wet, and fresh from the storm. Hands in the pockets of his uniform, he started along a pathway through the outer market, strolling around puddles. Gardeners had begun growing ornamental shale bark along the sides of the path, though it wasn't very high yet, just a few inches. A good shale bark ridge could take years to grow properly. Those two insufferable bridgemen followed along behind him. Not that Adolin minded the men personally. They seemed like amiable enough fellows, particularly when away from their commander. Adolin just didn't like needing minders. Though the storm had passed into the west, the afternoon felt gloomy. Clouds obscured the sun, which had moved from its zenith and was drooping slowly toward the distant horizon. He didn't pass many people, so his only companions were the bridgemen, well, those and a legion of kremlings that had emerged to feast upon plants that lapped at water in pools. Why did plants spend so much more time in their shells out here than they did back home? Shallan probably knew. He smiled, forcing thoughts of Sadius into the back of his mind. This thing with Shallan, it was working. It always worked at first, though, so he contained his enthusiasm. She was marvelous. Exotic, witty, and not smothered in a lethe propriety. She was smarter than he was, but she didn't make him feel stupid. That was a large point in her favor. He passed out of the market, then crossed the open ground beyond it, eventually reaching Dalinar's war camp. The guards led him through with crisp salutes. He idled in the war camp market, comparing the wares he saw here with those in the market near the pinnacle. What will happen to this place, Adolin thought, when the war stops? It would end someday, perhaps tomorrow, with the negotiations with the Parshendi Shardbearer. The Alethi presence wouldn't end here, not with the chasm fiends to hunt, but surely this larger population couldn't continue, could it? Could he really be witnessing a permanent shift of the king's seat? Hours later, after spending some time at jewelry shops looking for something for Shallan, Adolin and his guards reached his father's complex. By then, Adolin's feet were starting to ache and the camp had grown dark. He yawned, making his way through the cavernous guts of his father's bunkerish dwelling. Wasn't it about time they built a proper mansion? Being an example for the men was all well and good, but there were certain standards a family like theirs should uphold, particularly if the shattered plains were going to remain as important as they had been. It was... He hesitated, stopping at an intersection and looking right. He'd been intending to visit the kitchens for a snack, but a group of men moved and threw shadows in the other direction. Hushed whispers. "What is this?" Adolin demanded, marching toward the gathering, his two guards following. "Soldiers?
What have you found?
The men scrambled to turn and salute, spears to shoulders. They were more bridgemen from Kaladin's unit. Just beyond them were the doors to the wing where Dalinar, Adolin, and Renarin all made their quarters. These doors lay open, and the men had set spears on the ground. What was going on? Normally, two or maybe four men would be on guard here. Not eight. And why was there a parshman wearing a guardsman uniform, holding a spear with the others?
Sir, said a lanky, long-armed man at the front of the bridgeman, we were just heading in to check on the High Prince when—
Adolin didn't hear the rest. He pushed through the bridgeman, finally seeing what the spheres illuminated on the floor of the sitting room. More scratched glyphs. Adolin knelt down, trying to read them. Unfortunately, they hadn't been drawn in any kind of picture to help. He thought they were numbers.
32 days, said one of the bridgemen, a short Azish man. Seek the center.
Damnation. Have you told anyone of this?
Adolin asked.
We just found it, the Azish man said.
Post guards at either end of the hallway, Adolin said. And send for my aunt.
Adolin summoned his blade, then dismissed it, then summoned it again. A nervous habit. The white fog appeared, manifesting as little vines sprouting in the air, before snapping into the form of a shard blade, which suddenly weighed down his hand. He stood in the sitting room, those foreboding markings staring up at him as if in silent challenge. The closed door kept the bridgeman out so only he, Dalinar, and Navani would be privy to the discussion. Adolin wanted to use the blade to cut those cursed glyphs away. Dalinar had proven that he was sane. Aunt Navani almost had an entire document of the Dawn Chant translated using the words of Father's visions as a guide. The visions were from the Almighty. It all made sense. Now this.
They were made with a knife,
Navani said, kneeling beside the glyphs. The sitting room was a large open area, used for receiving callers or holding meetings. Doors beyond led to the study and the bedrooms.
This knife, Dalinar replied, holding up a side knife of the style most Light Eyes wore. My knife.
The edge was blunted and still bore flecks of stone from the gouges. The scratches matched the size of the blade. They'd found it just in front of the door to Dalinar's study where he'd spent the high storm. Alone. Navani's carriage had been delayed and she'd been forced to return to the palace or risk being caught in the storm.
Someone else could have taken it and done this, Adolin snapped. They could have sneaked into your study, grabbed it while you were consumed by the visions and come out here.
The other two looked at him.
Often, Navani said, the simplest answer is the right one.
Adolin sighed, dismissing his blade and slumping down in a chair beside the offending glyphs. His father stood tall. In fact, Dalinar Kholin never seemed to have stood as tall as he did now, hands clasped behind his back, eyes away from the glyphs, toward the wall, eastward. Dalinar was a rock, a boulder too big for even storms to move. He seemed so sure. It was something to cling to.
You don't remember anything? Navani asked Dalinar, rising.
No. He turned to Adolin. I think it's obvious now that I was behind each of these. Why does that bother you so much, son?
It's the idea of you scribbling on the ground, Adolin said, shivering. Lost in one of those visions. Not in control of yourself.
The Almighty's path for me is a strange one, Dalinar said. Why do I need to get the information this way? Scratches on the ground or the wall? Why not say it to me plainly in the visions?
It's foretelling, you realize, Adolin said softly. Seeing the future. A thing of the void bringers.
Yes, Dalinar narrowed his eyes. Seek the center. What do you think, Navani? The center of the shattered plains? What truths hide there?
The Parshendi, obviously.
They talked about the center of the shattered plains as if they knew of the place. But no man had been there, only Parshendi. To the Alethi, the word center just referred to the vast open expanse of unexplored plateaus beyond the scouted rims.
Yes, Adolin's father said. But where? Maybe they move around. Maybe there is no Parshendi city in the center.
They would only be able to move if they had soul casters, Navani said, which I personally doubt. They'll have entrenched somewhere. They aren't a nomadic people, and there's no reason for them to move.
If we can make peace, Dalinar mused, reaching the center would be a lot easier.
He looked to Adolin.
Have the bridgemen fill those scratches with creme. Then have them pull the rug over that section of floor.
I'll see it done.
Good, Dalinar said, seeming distant.
After that, get some sleep, son. Tomorrow is a big day.
Adolin nodded.
Father, were you aware that there is a Parshman among the bridgemen?
Yes, Dalinar said. There has been one among their numbers from the beginning, but they didn't arm him until I gave them permission.
Why would you do such a thing?
Out of curiosity, Dalinar said.
He turned and nodded toward the glyphs on the floor.
Tell me, Navani, assuming these numbers are counting toward a date, is it a day when a high storm will come?
32 days, Navani asked. That will be in the middle of the weeping. 32 days won't even be the exact end of the year, but 2 days ahead of it. I can't fathom the significance.
Ah, it was too convenient an answer anyway. Very well. Let's allow the guards back in and swear them to secrecy. Wouldn't want to inspire a panic.
51. Heirs. In short, if any presume Kazila to be innocent, you must look at the facts and deny them in their entirety. To say that the Radiants were destitute of integrity for this execution of one of their own, one who had obviously fraternized with the unwholesome elements, indicates the most slothful of reasoning. For the enemy's baleful influence demanded vigilance on all occasions, of war and of peace. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 32, page 17. The next day, Adolin stomped his feet into his boots, hair still damp from a morning bath. It was amazing the difference a little hot water and some time to reflect could make. He'd come to two decisions. He wasn't going to worry about his father's disconcerting behavior during the visions. The whole of it, the visions, the command to refound the Knights Radiant, the preparation for a disaster that might or might not come, was a package. Adolin had already decided to believe that his father wasn't mad. Further worry was pointless. The other decision might get him into trouble. He left his quarters, entering the sitting room where Dalinar was already planning with Navani, General Kahl, Tashav, and Captain Kaladin. Renarin, frustratingly, guarded the door wearing a Bridge IV uniform. He'd refused to give up on that decision of his, despite Adolin's insistence.
"We'll need the bridgemen again," Dalinar said. "If something goes wrong, we may need a quick retreat."
"I'll prepare bridges 5 and 12 for the day, sir," Kaladin said. "Those two seem nostalgic for their bridges, and talk about the bridge runs with fondness."
"Weren't those bloodbaths?" Navani asked.
"They were," Kaladin said. "But soldiers are a strange lot, Brightness. A disaster unifies them. These men would never want to go back, but they still identify as bridgemen."
Nearby, General Kahl nodded in understanding, though Navani still seemed baffled.
"I'll take my position here," Dalinar said,
holding up a map of the shattered plains.
"We can scout the meeting plateau first while I wait. It apparently has some odd rock formations."
"That sounds good," Brightness Tashav said.
"It does," Adolin said, joining the group. "Except for one thing. You won't be there, father."
"Adolin," Dalinar said with a suffering tone. "I know you think this is too dangerous, but..."
"It is too dangerous," Adolin said. "The assassin is still out there.
and he attacked us last on the very day the Parshendi messenger came to camp. Now we have a meeting with the enemy out on the Shattered Plains. Father, you can't go.
I have to, Dalinar said. Adolin, this could mean an end to the war. It could mean answers, why they attacked in the first place. I will not give up this opportunity.
We're not going to give it up, Adolin said. We're just going to do things a little differently.
How? Dalinar asked, narrowing his eyes.
Well, for one thing, Adolin said, I'm going to go in your place.
Impossible, Dalinar said. I won't risk my son on...
Father, Adolin snapped.
This is not subject to discussion.
The room fell silent. Dalinar lowered his hand from the map. Adolin stuck out his jaw, meeting his father's eyes. Storms, it was difficult to deny Dalinar Kholin. Did his father realize the presence he had? The way he moved people about by sheer force of expectation? Nobody contradicted him. Dalinar did what he wanted. Fortunately, these days, those motives had a noble purpose. But in many ways, he was the same man he had been 20 years ago, when he'd conquered a kingdom. He was the Blackthorn, and he got what he wanted. Except today.
You are too important, Adolin said, pointing. Deny that. Deny that your visions are vital. Deny that if you die, Alethkar would fall apart. Deny that every single person in this room is less important than you are.
Dalinar drew in a deep breath, then exhaled slowly.
It shouldn't be so. The kingdom needs to be strong enough to survive the loss of one man, no matter who.
Well, it's not there yet, Adolin said. To get it there, we're going to need you. And that means you need to let us watch out for you. I'm sorry, Father, but once in a while you just have to let someone else do their job. You can't fix every problem with your own hands.
He's right, sir, Kaladin said. You really shouldn't be risking yourself out on those plains. Not if there's another option.
I fail to see that there is one, Dalinar said, his tone cool.
Oh, there is, Adolin said. But I'm going to need to borrow Renarin's shard plate. The strangest thing about this experience, in Adolin's estimation, wasn't wearing his father's old armor. Despite the outward stylistic differences, suits of shardplate all tended to fit similarly. The armor adapted, and within a short time after donning it, the plate felt exactly like Adolin's own. It also wasn't strange to ride at the front of the force, Dalinar's banner flapping over his head. Adolin had been leading them to battle on his own for 6 weeks now. No, the strangest part was riding his father's horse. Gallant was a large black animal, bulkier and squatter than Sureblood, Adolin's horse. Gallant looked like a warhorse even when compared to other Rashadium. So far as Adolin knew, no man had ever ridden him but Dalinar. Rashadium were finicky that way. It had taken a lengthy explanation from Dalinar to even get the horse to allow Adolin to hold the reins, let alone climb into the saddle. It had eventually worked, but Adolin wouldn't dare ride Gallant into battle. He was pretty sure the beast would throw him off and run away, looking to protect Dalinar. It did feel odd climbing on a horse that wasn't Sureblood. He kept expecting Gallant to move differently than he did, turn his head at the wrong times. When Adolin patted his neck, the horse's mane felt off to him in ways he couldn't explain. He and his Rashadium were more than simply rider and horse, and he found himself oddly melancholy to be out on a ride without Sureblood. Foolishness. He had to stay focused. The procession approached the meeting plateau, which had a large, oddly shaped mound of rock near the center. This plateau was close to the Alethi side of the plains, but much farther south than Adolin had ever gone. Early patrols had said chasm fiends were more common out in this region, but they never spotted a chrysalis here. Some kind of hunting ground, but not a place for pupating? The Parshendi weren't there yet. When the scouts reported that the plateau was secure, Adolin urged Gallant across the mobile bridge. He felt warm in his plate. The seasons, it seemed, had finally decided to inch through spring and maybe even towards summer. He approached the rock mound at the center.
It really was odd. Adolin circled it, noticing its shape, ridged in places, almost like...
It's a chasm fiend, Adolin realized.
He passed the face, a hollowed-out piece of stone that evoked the exact feeling of a chasm fiend's head. A statue? No, it was too natural. A chasm fiend had died here centuries ago, and instead of being blown away, had slowly crusted over with creme. The result was eerie. The creme had duplicated the creature's form, clinging to the carapace, entombing it. The hulking rock seemed like a creature born of stone, like the ancient stories of void bringers. Adolin shivered, nudging the horse away from the stone corpse and toward the other side of the plateau. Shortly, he heard alarms from the outrunners. Parshendi coming. He steeled himself, ready to summon his shard blade. Behind him, arrayed a group of bridgemen, 10 in number, including that Parshman. Captain Kaladin had remained with Dalinar back in the war camp, just in case. Adolin was the one more exposed. Part of him wished for the assassin to come today, so Adolin could try himself again. Of all the duels he hoped to fight in the future, this one, against the man who had killed his uncle, would be the most important, even more than taking down Sadeus. The assassin did not make an appearance as a group of 200 Parshendi crossed from the next plateau, jumping gracefully and landing on the meeting plateau. Adolin's soldiers stirred, armor clanking, spears lowering. It had been years since men in Parshendi had met without blood being spilled. All right, Adolin said in his helm. Fetch my scribe. Brightness in Adara was carried up through the ranks in a palanquin. Dalinar wanted Navani with him, ostensibly because he wanted her advice, but probably also to protect her. Let's go, Adolin said, nudging Gallant forward. They crossed the plateau, just him and Brightness in Adara, who rose from her palanquin to walk. She was a wizened matron, with gray hair she cut short for simplicity. He'd seen sticks with more flesh on them than she had, but she was keen-minded and as trustworthy a scribe as they had. The Parshendi shardbearer emerged from the ranks and strode forward on the rocks alone. Uncaring, unworried. This was a confident one. Adolin dismounted and went the rest of the way on foot, in Adara at his side. They stopped a few feet from the Parshendi, the three of them alone on an expanse of rock, the fossilized chasm fiend, staring at them from the left.
I am Eshanai, the Parshendi said. Do you remember me?
No, Adolin said. He pitched his voice down to try and match the voice of his father and hoped that, with the helm in place, it would be enough to fool this woman, who couldn't know well what Dalinar sounded like.
Not surprising, Eshanai said. I was young and unimportant when we first met. Barely worth remembering.
Adolin had originally expected Parshendi conversation to be sing-songish from what he'd heard said of them. That wasn't the case at all. Eshanai had a rhythm to her words, the way she emphasized them and where she paused. She changed tones, but the result was more of a chant than a song. Inadara took out a writing board and span reed, then started writing down what Eshanai said.
What is this? Eshanai demanded. I came alone, as you asked, Adolin said, trying to project his father's air of command. But I will record what is said and send it back to my generals.
Eshanai did not raise her faceplate, so Adolin had a good excuse not to raise his. They stared at each other through eye slits. This was not going as well as his father had hoped, but it was about what Adolin had expected.
We are here, Adolin said, using the words his father had suggested he begin with, to discuss the terms of a Parshendi surrender.
Eshanai laughed.
This is not the point at all.
Then what? Adolin demanded. You seemed eager to meet with me. Why?
Things have changed since I spoke with your son, Blackthorn. important things.
What things?
Things you cannot imagine, Eshonai said.
Adolin waited, as if pondering, but actually giving Inadara time to correspond with the war camps. Inadara leaned up to him, whispering what Navani and Dalinar had written for him to say.
We tire of this war, Parshendi, Adolin said. Your numbers dwindle. We know this. Let us make a truce, one that would benefit us both.
We are not as weak as you believe, Eshonai said.
Adolin found himself frowning. When she'd spoken to him before, she'd seemed passionate, inviting. Now she was cold and dismissive. Was that right? She was Parshendi. Perhaps human emotions didn't apply to her. Inadara whispered more to him.
What do you want? Adolin asked, speaking the words his father sent. How can there be peace?
There will be peace, Blackthorn, when one of us is dead. I came here because I wanted to see you with my own eyes, and I wanted to warn you. We have just changed the rules of this conflict. Squabbling over gemstones no longer matters.
No longer matters? Adolin started to sweat. She makes it sound like they were playing their own game all this time, not desperate at all. Could the Alethi have misjudged everything so profoundly? She turned to go. No. All of this just to have the meeting puff into smoke? Storm it!
Wait! Adolin cried, stepping forward. Why? Why are you acting like this? What is wrong?
She looked back at him.
You really want to end this?
Yes. Please. I want peace, regardless of the cost.
Then you will have to destroy us.
Why? Adolin repeated. Why did you kill Gavilar all those years ago? Why betray our treaty?
King Gavilar, Eshonai said, as if mulling over the name. He should not have revealed his plans to us that night. Poor fool. He did not know. He bragged, thinking we would welcome the return of our gods.
She shook her head, then turned again and jogged off, armor clinking. Adolin stepped back, feeling useless. If his father had been there, would he have been able to do more? Inadara still wrote, sending the words to Dalinar. A reply from him finally came.
Return to the war camps. There is nothing you or I myself could have done. Clearly her mind is already made up.
Adolin spent the return ride brooding. When he finally reached the war camps a few hours later, he found his father in conference with Navani, Kahl, Tashav, and the army's four battalion lords. Together they pored over the words that Inadara had sent. A group of Parshman servants quietly brought wine and fruit. Taleb, wearing the plate that Adolin had won from his duel with Iraniv, watched from the side of the room, shardhammer on his back, faceplate up. His people had once ruled Alethkar. What did he think of all this? The man usually kept his opinions to himself. Adolin stomped into the room, pulling off his father's, well, Renarin's helm.
I should have let you go, Adolin said. It wasn't a trap. Perhaps you could have talked sense to her.
These are the people who murdered my brother on the very night they signed a treaty with him, Dalinar said, inspecting maps on the table. It seems they have not changed at all from that day. You did perfectly, son. We know everything we need to.
We do?
Adolin said, walking up to the table, helm under arm.
Yes, Dalinar said, looking up. We know that they will not agree to peace no matter what. My conscience is clear.
Adolin looked over the outspread maps.
What is this?
He asked, noting troop movement symbols. They were all pointed across the shattered plains.
A plan of assault, Dalinar said quietly. The Parshendi will not deal with us, and they are planning something big, something to change the war. The time has come to bring the fight directly to them and end this war one way or another.
Stormfather, Adolin said.
And if we're surrounded while we're out there?
We will take everyone, Dalinar said. Our whole army. And as many of the High Princes as will join me. Soulcasters for food. The Parshendi won't be able to surround that large a force, and even if they did, it wouldn't matter. We'll be able to stand against them.
We can leave right after the final high storm before the Weeping, Navani said, writing some numbers on the side of the map. It is the light year, and so we'll have steady rains but no high storms for weeks. We won't be exposed to one while out on the plains.
It would also put them out on the shattered plains, alone, within days of the date that had been scratched on the walls and floor. Adolin's spine crawled.
We have to beat them to it, Dalinar said softly, scanning the maps. Interrupt whatever it is they are planning, before the countdown ends.
He looked up at Adolin.
I need you to duel more. High-profile matches, as high-profile as you can manage. Win shards for me, son.
I'm dueling Elit tomorrow, Adolin said. From there, I have a plan for my next target.
Good. To succeed out on the plains, we will need shard-bearers, and we will need the loyalty of as many High Princes as will follow me. Focus your dueling on the shard-bearers of the faction loyal to Sadeus, and beat them with as much fanfare as you can manage. I will go to the neutral High Princes and will remind them of their oaths to fulfill the Vengeance Pact. If we can take shards from those who follow Sadeus and use them to end the war, it will go a long way toward proving what I've been saying all along. That unity is the path to Alethi greatness.
Adolin nodded. I'll see it done.
52. Into the Sky. Now, as the Truth Watchers were esoteric in nature, their order being formed entirely of those who never spoke or wrote of what they did, in this lies frustration for those who would see their exceeding secrecy from the outside. They were not naturally inclined to explanation, and in the case of Corberon's disagreements, their silence was not a sign of an exceeding abundance of disdain, but rather an exceeding abundance of tact. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 11, page 6. Kaladin strolled along the shattered plains at night, passing tufts of shale bark and vines, lifespren spinning about them as motes. Puddles still lingered in low spots from the previous day's high storm, fat with creme for the plants to feast upon. To his left, Kaladin heard the sounds of the war camps, busy with activity. To the right, silence. Just those endless plateaus. When he'd been a bridgeman, Sadeus's troops hadn't stopped him from walking this path. What was there for men out here, on the plains? Instead, Sadeus had posted guards at the edges of the camps and at bridges, so the slaves couldn't escape. What was there for men out here? Nothing but salvation itself, discovered in the depths of those chasms. Kaladin turned and strolled out along one of the chasms, passing soldiers on guard duty at bridges, torches shivering in the wind. They saluted him. There, he thought, picking his way along a particular plateau. The war camps to his left stained the air with light, enough to see where he was. At the plateau's edge, he came to the place where he had met with the king's wit on that night weeks ago. A night of decision, a night of change. Kaladin stepped up to the edge of the chasm, looking eastward. Change and decision. He checked over his shoulder. He'd passed the guard post, and nobody was close enough to see him. So, belt laden with bags of spheres, Kaladin stepped off into the chasm.
Shallan did not care for Sadeus's war camp. The air was different here than it was in Sabariel's camp. It stank, and it smelled of desperation. Was desperation even a smell? She thought she could describe it. The scent of sweat, of cheap drink, and of creme that had not been cleaned off the streets. That all churned above roads that were poorly lit. In Sabariel's camp, people walked in groups. Here they loped along in packs. Sabariel's camp smelled of spice and industry, of new leather and sometimes livestock. Dalinar's camp smelled of polish and oil. Around every second corner in Dalinar's camp, someone was doing something practical. There were too few soldiers in Dalinar's camp these days, but each wore his uniform as if it were a shield against the chaos of the times. In Sadius's camp, the men who wore their uniforms wore them with unbuttoned jackets and wrinkled trousers. She passed tavern after tavern, each spitting forth a racket. The women who idled in front of some indicated that not all were simply taverns. Whorehouses were common in every camp, of course, but they seemed more blatant here. She passed fewer parshmen than she commonly saw in Sabariel's camp. Sadius preferred traditional slaves, men and women with branded foreheads, scurrying about with backs bowed and shoulders slumped. This was honestly what she'd expected from all of the war camps. She'd read accounts of men at war, of camp followers and discipline problems, of tempers flaring, of the attitudes of men who were trained to kill. Perhaps instead of wondering at the awfulness of Sadius's camp, she should be marveling that the others weren't the same. Shallan hurried on her way. She wore the face of a young, dark-eyed man, her hair pushed up into her cap. She wore a pair of sturdy gloves. Even disguised as a boy, she wasn't about to go around with her safe hand exposed. Before leaving tonight, she had done a series of sketches to use as new faces, if need be. Testing had proven she could draw a sketch in the morning, then use it for an image in the afternoon. If she waited longer than about a day, though, the image she created was blurred and sometimes looked melted. That made perfect sense to Shallan. The process of creation left a picture in her mind that eventually wore thin. Her current face had been based on the messenger youths who moved in Sadius's camp. Though her heart thumped every time she passed a pack of soldiers, nobody gave her a second glance.